It's Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's golden years. Welcome, I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour, crime stories, later on, the adventures of the Thin Man with Nick and Nora Charles, but right now, it's the Philip Morris Playhouse with the play 4 Hours to Kill. Radio's Sam Spade, Howard Duff, plays the title role in this episode from CBS, heard on May 13th, 1949.
Johnny presents the Philip Morris Playhouse, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear. Tonight's star, Howard Duff. And now, with Howard Duff as star, we bring you 4 Hours to Kill. Tonight's production transcribed in the Philip Morris Playhouse.
So you want to know what's the matter? What's wrong with me? Okay, sit down on that bench over there. Make yourself comfortable. Because this takes a while to tell, and I want to get all of it off my chest. You know, now that it's over, I can look back and see everything in perspective. Clear back to the days when my brother Walter and I were kids in Vermont. And I can see now that my life's divided into two halves. The first 28 years and the last 4 hours. Yeah. 4 hours ago, I was standing at the big front door of the Bachelor's Club on my way to see Walter for the first time in 5 years. I knew it was going to be tough, but things had changed since the last time we were together. Walter had arrived now. He was the kind of New York lawyer who divides his time between the front page and the society section, and I was still a newspaper bum. The competition between us was over. I was hoping that now, with the numbers up on the scoreboard for everybody to see, Walter might let down a little, decide he could afford to call off whatever it was that had set us at each other's throats from the beginning. Anyway, that's what I hoped. As I said, I knew it would be tough. Asking Walter for anything was always tough. Well, I finally swallowed what pride I had left and walked into the lobby. At the desk next to the stairway, the clerk was in a huddle with a bellboy.
What a big one does the guy expect? 7:25, he calls for his dinner. And if you don't believe me, you can ask the steward because he wrote the time down.
It's one of those clubs where you're supposed to put a call through the desk before going upstairs. I stood around waiting for a minute and figured it might be better if Walter didn't know I was coming, so I walked past them and up the stairway. They didn't even see me.
So I says to myself, okay, so the guy's got a load of martinis aboard.
Let me call him. What does he think we are, magicians? I'll have to wait. His phone's tied up.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, Larry. Starting tomorrow, someone else is going to take care of Walter Pomeroy.
So it was Walter and with a load of martinis. I should have stopped right then, turned around, and walked out. It was my exit cue, but I muffed it. Well, nothing can change that now. Anyway, I walked on up to the second floor and down the hall at 206.
Well, it's about time you got here. Bring it.
Hello, Walter.
Oh, Theodore.
That's right.
Well, Brother Theodore, come on in. You're just in time for dinner. The boy will be up in a minute and...
Oh, no thanks, Walter. I haven't got too much time.
Huh? You mean you're turning down a free meal?
Oh, look, let's forget that stuff, shall we? We're grown up now. There's no
sure,
point...
Sure, sure. Sit down.
No, I won't be too long.
Oh? Tell me, Ted, how are things on the paper in Buffalo?
Okay, I guess. I quit yesterday.
Oh, you quit?
Yeah.
Not fired. You were quit.
That's what I said.
So now you're out of a job and you figure that
I... Wait a minute, Walter. Wait a minute. Let me tell you all of it. There's a guy I met in the service, Dan Allender. He's down in Florida now, Fort Lauderdale. Look here. Here's the letter I got from him. He's buying a paper there, a little country sheet. 8 pages twice a week.
Mm-hmm.
He wants me to go in with him. It's nothing big, Walter, but it's the kind of thing I've been looking for years. We can really do something down there. The place is growing. We can double the circulation in 6 months. Dan's got all kinds of ideas, and so have I. He says... What's the matter? What's so funny?
You.
I don't get it.
How much, Ted?
Well, the price was $10,000. I'll need half of it.
$5,000.
That's right.
Same song, 82nd verse.
I'm not begging, Walter.
What is it, then?
I'm asking you for a loan. I'll sign a note. Well, what about it?
What happened to your pride, Ted?
I thought we agreed to forget...
I didn't agree to anything. You've not only lost what pride you haven't even got good sense.
Okay, Walter. That answers my question.
It's good for a laugh, though. Little brother Theodore crawling on his belly.
Shut up, Walter.
$5,000. You thought that
I said
give
shut
you...
up.
Let go of me. Let go of me, Ted.
I've had all of you. I'm going to take you. Hear that, Walter? I've had all of
you. Let go of me, you.
Okay, Walter. Okay.
Oh, Ted!
You had that coming for a long time, Walter. Yeah, you're right. I was stupid thinking you... Get up. Come on, Walter. Get up. I won't bother you anymore. I won't... Walter. Walter! I saw it when I turned him over. A stream of blood oozing out of his right temple where he'd hit his head in the corner of the hearth. No pulse. No breath. Walter was dead. In a spot like that, you don't think. You move. No one knew I was in New York, and I was sure the clerk and the bellboy hadn't seen me cross the lobby. If I could get out without being spotted, I had a chance. I picked up the letter from Allenby, went to the door, put my handkerchief over the knob, turned back to give the room a last look before I left. That's when I saw it. The telephone receiver was off the hook. I remember I looked down at it like it was a poisonous snake or something. Started to hang it up, then changed my mind. Hello?
Walter?
Yeah. Yeah, this is Walter.
Really?
Sorry I kept you waiting so long, but...
Wait a minute. Let's have an understanding right now. When I want a good newspaper man, I'll call you. When I want impersonations, I'll go see the floor show at Leon and Eddie's. Why don't you call your brother and tell him I'm getting tired of holding this telephone?
Oh. Who I say is calling?
He knows. I made that pretty clear just before you barged into his apartment.
Well, what makes you think I barged in?
Just a guess. Am I warm?
Not very.
From this end, the dialogue sounded more like a Donnybrook than a pink tea.
Look, let's not go into...
Oh, don't apologize, Theodore. Walter's a class A heel and he had it coming. Now go pick him up off the floor. Wherever you left him, bring him to the phone.
Wait. He's out of the apartment right now. Why don't you just give me your name and number and I'll...
He already has it. I gave it to him a year ago in a moment of weakness. Tell him I'll call him back in an hour or so.
Hold it a minute.
Your dinner, Mr. Pomeroy.
Listen, Walter won't be back until late tonight. You better call him at his office in the morning. You got that?
Yes, but...
Mr. Pomeroy.
If I'd had any sense, I'd have given up right then with the bellboy pounding on the door with that girl on the phone who could send me to the chair with a word... As I said, in a spot like that, you don't think. Something else takes over.
You in there, Mr. Pomeroy?
I had to get my hands on that girl. I knew he'd have her number written down somewhere. There was nothing on the telephone stand, nothing in the drawers but a couple of bridge score pads and some other junk. I wiped the knobs with a handkerchief and turned back to Walter. I began searching his pockets. The bellboy was rattling some keys outside when I found it. A little brown, leather-covered book with some names and numbers in it. I jumped toward the door, slid behind it just as it opened.
Mr. Pomeroy, I knocked and I... Holy cow! Larry! Larry!
The minute he turned the corner, I took off for the back stairway. The pack was beginning to howl up front when I left for the rear door, still unseen, safe, except for that girl. I knew I'd have to find her somehow, somewhere, and then I'd have to kill her. I started across town toward Fifth Avenue, walking slowly, letting the cold night air work on my face. By now, the call was into headquarters and a prowl car was on the way. In a half hour, the homicide men would be there with the police photographers. By 9, the story would be into the morning papers. They'd be out around midnight and Walter was front page stuff. And that girl, who'd heard it all on the phone, she'd be able to read the headlines from across the street. And once she added it up, I was through. I had 4 hours to find her. Then somehow, somewhere, I knew I'd have to kill her. I found a phone booth in a Fifth Avenue drugstore and took out the memo book. He'd scribbled first names and phone numbers in 4 or 5 pages. The rest of it was blank. No addresses, nothing else to go on. About a dozen of them belonged to women. So I started on number one, Anna Lee, at a Murray Hill number.
Hello.
Is this Murray Hill 40098?
That's right.
Is Joanne there, please?
Joanne? Sorry, I don't know any Joanne. Wrong number. Are you sure you want...
I guess I'd better check it again. Sorry.
No, Louise isn't in. And if you're that guy who's been calling her, let me tell you right now.
You say you are making a survey? Well, my little head isn't much good at figures, but I'll surely be glad to help you all as I can.
Who's this?
Maxine. Who's this?
Didn't I talk to you a while ago?
Who is... Oh, don't tell me it's Theodore.
Make it Ted, will you?
Well, we're real friendly now, huh?
I hope so.
I see. And you make a habit of hanging up in people's faces?
Well, we were cut off, and you were so secret about giving me your name, I couldn't call you back.
Mm. So you went out and bought yourself a crystal ball?
Nope. I just called up every girl in Walter's telephone index until you answered.
Why did you do that?
Because I want to see if the girl is as nice as the voice.
How do you blush over the phone?
Why don't you save us both a lot of trouble by telling me where I can meet you?
I'd rather keep it this way.
I can be pretty persistent.
I can be pretty stubborn. One Pomeroy is about all I can cope with at one time. I'm awfully sorry, Theodore, but...
Wait a minute. Can you talk a little louder? I can't quite... what's that music? The radio?
No, it's not the radio. And please don't bother me. You're a nice boy, but I'm too busy right now to play any games.
Look, you've got to at least give me your last name, Maxine.
Not tonight, Theodore. Some other time.
But wait.
Sorry, pal. You forced me to do this.
Maxine, wait a minute. Wait. Would you tell me if you have a party by the name of Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376?
Thomas P. Sherman, S-H-E-R-M-A-N?
Right. Plaza 22376.
One moment, please.
I looked at my watch. 9 o'clock. I could close my eyes now and see Walter's room, jammed with the boys from the police beat, crowding around the medical examiner, grabbing for the phone, shooting questions at the lieutenant in charge.
Hello, sir.
Yes?
We have no record of a Thomas P. Sherman at Plaza 22376.
Oh, who is listed at that number?
I'm sorry, sir. We do not give that information.
What about the address of the number?
I'm sorry, sir, but we are not...
Look, I've got to have it, operator. It's very urgent.
One moment. I'll connect you with the supervisor.
No, skip it. I started to get panicky then. Got a lot of wild ideas about running, grabbing the next plane for anywhere. But I fought it down. I'd been a reporter long enough to know what happens to guys who run. I had to get that girl. I had to. Yeah.
Through the phone, pal.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, thanks, pal. I gotta get a hold of the little woman. You know, more I explain to her now, the less I'll have to do when I do get home. Boy, they're sure going all out on that Legion parade, ain't they?
Yeah. Parade? Excuse me.
Hey, sure, what's the matter?
What was that you said about a parade?
Legion parade, coming up Fifth Avenue. Crosstown traffic's tied up for 2 hours.
Coming by here?
Yeah, band's down the street now.
A band? That's what I heard.
Huh?
Nothing. Thanks. Thanks a lot. Crowds were lining the curves outside. Down the avenue, somewhere around 78th Street, I could hear the band at the head of the parade marching towards us. The same band I'd heard over her telephone, passing so close it almost covered her voice. She was on a low floor next to the street, and the band had passed her at exactly 9:01. I remembered looking at my watch. I stood there and waited for the band. It was a wild idea, but I had a feeling if I figured it carefully, I could come pretty close. I walked a block to the bank, then another one to make sure. It took them a minute and 20 seconds to cover a block. We hit 84th Street at 16 minutes and 20 seconds past 9. They'd covered exactly 13 blocks since they'd passed her telephone. That made it somewhere around 71st Street on a ground floor, an apartment, maybe a residential hotel facing Central Park. I turned and started running back down Fifth Avenue. I was getting close, and there were still 2 hours before the morning papers hit the street. Next hour and a half, I checked Fifth Avenue for two blocks on either side of 71st, going over nameplates and apartment doorways. There were two Maxines. I talked to one on the house phone. She must have been 70 and met the other one face to face, a hatchet-faced character who didn't appreciate being got out of bed by a drunk who had the wrong apartment. That left only one possibility, a residential hotel in the middle of the block. I decided I'd try calling her again. Walked past the cigar stand in the lobby to a row of phone booths at the rear. It was 10 minutes to 11. Time was running out. Hello, Maxine?
Oh, here we go again. What is it this time, Theodore?
I'm still trying to wear you down.
Because you like my voice.
Right.
You think I'm charming, practically irresistible?
Right. And another thing.
What?
I think you live in the Grayson Arms on Fifth Avenue.
Wrong. I live on the other side of town.
Wait now, be honest with me.
Hold it, will you, just a minute?
She was lying. She knew what it was all about and was playing with me. The panic came back. I looked across the marble floor of the lobby toward the cigar stand. A customer was standing there, a girl had appeared behind the counter to wait on him. Then he left and another guy came in. My heart stood. It was the distributor with a bundle of morning papers.
Hello, Eddie.
Hi, about ready to fold?
Mm-hmm. Leave him on the counter.
All right.
Nice.
All right.
My mind was paralyzed. It didn't sink in. Not even when I saw the girl turn away, pick up a phone. Well, you were stringing me along about living on the other side of town. Listen, Maxine, you've got to... You...
Yes? Hello? Ted, are you there?
Yeah. Wait. Maxine, have you got the time?
Just a second.
I saw the girl put down the phone, hold her watch toward the light.
It's 5 to 11.
When are you through work?
Right now. Wait, how did you know I was working?
Stay put for a minute and I'll tell you. Hello.
Hold it a minute, Ted, will you? Yes, sir.
Package of those, huh?
Yes, sir. 18 and 25. Thank you. Anything else?
That's up to you.
Now, look, friend.
Wait, I told you I was the persistent type.
What are you talking... You're Ted.
Disappointed?
Not exactly. How did you...
I was calling from the booth over there.
Oh. You mind if I hang up on you again? How did you find the Grayson Arms?
My crystal ball.
You ought to get yourself a booth at the county fair. You'd make a fortune.
Yeah, it's only a sideline. Do you really live across town?
The worst-looking brownstone on 75th, but it's home.
Good. Then I can walk you home.
Walter won't like this.
No, he won't mind.
Okay, Theodore. I'm whipped. Let me lock up and get my things. I'll be with you in a minute.
I waited while she shut things down, threw a tweed coat over her shoulders, put a blue felt hat with a feather in it in the back of her head. The face matched the voice. Dark hair, wide-set blue eyes with laugh wrinkles at the corners. But I wasn't thinking about that then. I was thinking what a break it was she lived across town, on the other side of Central Park.
Ted.
Huh?
Mind if I mention something?
No, go ahead.
We're going the wrong way. The main path across the park's down there.
Oh, I know. This is a shortcut, a little darker, but shorter. You don't mind?
No, I don't mind.
At the last minute, she grabbed the paper off the pile, folded it, and stuck it in her pocket without looking at it. We turned into a dark byway. She moved closer and took my arm. The paper pressed against me like a hot branding iron in my side. My heart was pounding now. There was a choking lump in my throat. I hardly dared to talk.
I'm sorry I gave you such a bad time tonight, Ted.
Forget it.
I guess I thought you'd be different. More like your brother. Why are we stopping? Why did you do it?
What do you mean?
You can let your hair down. Walter can't hear us.
Why did I do what?
You mean you do this every night?
What?
Call up strange women and tell them you've fallen in love with their voices?
Oh, let's not talk about that now.
I don't get it, Ted.
Look, I'll tell you later.
Well, never mind. I just thought it was worth mentioning, that's all. I guess I was wrong. Good night, Ted. I can make it the rest of the way alone.
No, wait.
I mean it. Let go of me.
Shh. Quiet. It's a cop. He'll hear us.
Well, I don't care. I just...
Held her tight, my lips hard against hers. I heard the cop walk by on the main path 50 feet away. There in the dark byway, I could have done it. 10 seconds, maybe 20, and it would be over. I'd be free. But I discovered something else. It wasn't just that I loved her. I knew that now as I felt her respond, felt her arms tighten around me. No, it wasn't just that. I said it before, that back in that room with Walter's body at my feet, I stopped thinking. Something else took over. I was like an animal, fighting for life, going on nerve and instinct. But there on that black pathway in the park, I began to think again like a human being. And I knew that whatever it is that's born into a murderer wasn't in me. That lover or hater, I could no more murder this girl in cold blood than fly to the moon.
Here's the 8th Avenue entrance.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell me, Ted? Something's tearing you to pieces. I can see it.
Okay. You got a morning paper in your coat pocket. Take a look at it.
Paper? What's that got to do with...
Here, give it to me. Yeah, page one. I knew it. Lawyer attacked in city apartment.
Walter?
Yeah, you asked me. Here it is. New York, January 18th. Bruised and bleeding after an attack by a mysterious visitor into his rooms at the Bachelor's Club early last night, Walter Pomeroy. Wait a minute.
Go on.
Walter Pomeroy, noted criminal lawyer, still refused to disclose the identity of his assailant. Dr. James Penrose, attending physician, said Pomeroy suffered a possible concussion from a severe blow on the head, but was otherwise progressing nicely and would be released from city hospital in 24 hours. The attack came... Good Lord.
Severe blow on the head.
He fell. Listen. Listen, Maxine. This doesn't tell at all. There's something else.
Then what is it? What is the matter?
Okay. So you want to know what's the matter? What's wrong with me? Okay. Sit down on that bench over there. Make yourself comfortable because this takes a while to tell and I want to... That's it. That's what's wrong. I wanted you to know all of it because you're important to me now. More important than anything else in the world. You can check out if you want to.
It's nothing a cup of coffee won't cure.
Max. Darling.
There's an all-night stand around the corner. Got 20 cents?
Tonight, the Philip Morris Playhouse presented 4 Hours to Kill, produced, edited, and directed by William Spear.
Our Philip Morris Playhouse must have seemed like home to you, Mr. Duff, having you track down a woman, your usual Sam Spade caper.
True, Johnny, and now I spend my days tracking down Yvonne DiCarlo out at Universal International, where we're making Calamity Jane and Sam Bass. Pretty nice profession acting, all in all, or would you care to say, Johnny?
It figures.
What are you lined up for next week, Johnny?
Next week, the Philip Morris Playhouse will present Chester Morris in an exciting script called Copper Turns Green. And thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Johnny. Good night.
Good night, Mr. Duff.
And now goodbye, Johnny. See you next Friday, same time, same station, when once again we will present transcribed the Philip Morris Playhouse, starring Chester Morris. Until then...
The Philip Morris Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from May 13, 1949. The same script would be used about 6 months later on the suspense series in January of 1950 with Robert Taylor, movie actor in the leading role, and Kathy Lewis from that last broadcast reprising hers for radio's outstanding Theater of Thrills. You're listening to an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now it's The Adventures of the Thin Man, the broadcast hosted by, once again, Howard Duff, who was in the service at the time, broadcasting for Armed Forces Radio. One of the earliest surviving copies from the series, from October 6, 1944 on CBS, called The Case of the Suspicious Hangover.
Good evening. This is Sergeant X. Of all the countless characters created by the pen, comparatively few are destined for a long public life. However, Dashiell Hammett, the mystery writer, created a couple of characters named Nick and Nora Charles about 10 or more years ago. Well, Nora and Nick are still around and still doing fine, as you hear tonight in the Mystery Playhouse. Yes, tonight, the Mystery Playhouse is host to Nick and Nora Charles as they appear in another episode from The Adventures of the Thin Man. Well, to begin with, our mystery in the lighter vein is chock full of surprising and unusual occurrences. Take, for instance, the fact that it's 9 o'clock in the morning when our story opens, and Nick Charles, who usually can't be pried from the arms of Morpheus before noon except in case of fire or disorder, is not only up but fully dressed. And it's in this extremely unlikely situation that he's found by his good friend, Ebenezer Williams, sheriff of Crabtree County. Eb is very surprised indeed. In fact, you might say he's amazed.
Well, all dressed. My Godfrey. You sure you're all right, Nick?
Oh, come in, Eb. I've been going crazy. I've been up all night.
What's wrong?
Nora's gone. She left the house yesterday afternoon. I haven't heard a word from her since.
Oh, so she finally come to her senses. Did she find another fella?
Eb, this is serious. I called the police, the newspapers. There's not a trace of her. This never happened before.
Oh, take it easy, Nick.
Eb, I've never felt so miserable. Well, look at me. No dinner, no sleep, no Nora.
Maybe that'll learn you to be nice to your next wife.
I don't want a next wife. I want the one I got. You can't get that model anymore. What am I saying? Eb, do you really think she left me?
Maybe.
Maybe that's the police. Maybe they found the body.
Maybe. Shall I answer it?
No, I'll face it. I'll have it coming to me. Hello?
Hello. Tell Nora that Wolfie is calling.
Who are you?
Wolfie, you dope.
Well, I'm Nora's husband.
Don't worry. You won't be for long.
Oh, how do you know?
Because I'm the guy she's going to marry.
Who says so?
She does. She proposed to me last night.
Hey, what is this, a gag? What did you do to my wife?
My dear fellow.
Hey, come on, you pug, talk.
I refuse to listen to such language over a telephone. Oh.
Hello. Hello.
Who was that?
Some idiot. Nora promised to marry last night.
That ain't possible. She can't be married to two idiots at the same time.
That guy screamed just before he hung up. Eb, what could have happened to Nora? Hello.
Hello? This is Leo.
Hello, Leo. What do you want?
$200, of course.
What for?
The mirror, naturally. It's cheap. But that's Leo for you. Always a sucker for a beautiful dame.
Listen, I don't know anything about this.
Well, didn't your wife tell you about me?
No.
Oh, that's deceptive.
Where'd you last see my wife?
In Leo's. The gathering place of convivial spirits. She left after she broke the mirror behind my bar. Why?
My wife didn't get home. I've been looking everywhere for her.
Entre nous, bud. You shouldn't let a dame like that go around loose.
That's just it. Was she loose?
Well, I'd say she was tight.
That's impossible. Nora never gets tight.
Does she throw horseshoes at mirrors in her natural state?
Where did she get a horseshoe?
From a horse, naturally.
Who was my wife with?
One was a female lady of interesting design. The other was a male gentleman of designing interests.
What are you talking about?
The guy I know. His name is Bill Martin, and no good. The dame I didn't know.
Listen, I'll be down to your place. Where is it?
On 6th Avenue in the village. You know what I'd do if I had a wife like yours, Bud?
No, what?
I'd lock her and me in a golden cage and throw away the key. Bye.
Goodbye, Leo. Oh, Ev, this is the zaniest thing that ever happened.
Nicky, darling.
Nora.
Oh, and Ev Williams. How are you, M.D. Webby?
Fine, Nori. And how are you? Oh. Or is it a military secret?
I'm feeling deliriously hilarious. Have you ever walked on bubbles?
No, dear.
It requires the greatest delicacy, and it's hard to keep your balance. Kiss me, darling.
Nora, what have you been drinking?
I didn't touch a drop. All I had was one teeny-weeny cup of tea.
Tea?
Mm-hmm, with crumpets. Kiss me.
Where were you last night?
Kiss me first.
There. Now, where were you last night?
Last night? Well, darling, I had tea with Joan Lawrence, and then... Then I don't remember. That's odd, isn't it?
Well, don't you remember anything?
Of course. I woke up in a nice, comfy hotel suite, and I tried to phone you, but the line was busy, so I came over, and here I am. Will you nail down that floor? Oh, catch me!
Laura! She's out, Eb.
Yeah. Well, I reckon that solves the mystery of your missing wife.
No, Eb, you're wrong. I'm afraid we're at the beginning of another mystery.
Huh?
Look up Dr. Barton's name in the phone book. Tell him to get up here immediately.
Why? Is there something wrong?
Look at her eyes, Eb. Unless I'm crazy, she's been drugged.
Am I dying?
No, dear. The doctor said you'll be okay.
The doctor?
Yes, sir, Nori. You've been drugged.
Oh, why should anyone want to do a thing like that to little me?
That's what I want to find out. What happened after you had tea with Joan Lawrence?
I don't know.
In your bag, we found a key to a suite in the Wilson Hotel. You remember registering there?
No, but I woke up there.
Where'd you go between the time you had tea with Joan and the time you woke up?
I've no idea.
Do you remember going to a joint called Leo's, a gathering place of convivial spirits?
Sounds delightful. Was I there?
I reckon so. You broke the mirror behind his bar with a horseshoe. Now, what made you do a thing like that?
Well, I can't imagine, Eb. But I do remember one thing. There was the nicest man with me and Joan.
Wolfie?
No, I don't remember anyone named Wolfie.
Well, you should, dear. You asked him to marry you.
You know, I must have had a wonderful time. Tell me more.
You know a fellow named Bill Martin?
That's him. He's the nicest man. Joan knew him. He's in business with her husband. Darling, did you call Joan?
Yes, baby. No one answers at her apartment.
Oh, that's funny. Nick, do you think something happened to Joan?
I don't know, darling. But I don't think you were drugged by accident. We're going to the Wilson Hotel and check that key you have.
Yeah.
Was this the suite you woke up in?
Mm-hmm. I remember. It looked a mess.
Looks like a hurricane struck it.
Isn't it a shame, dear?
What?
I evidently had the time of my life last night, and I didn't even know it.
Hey, Mr. Russell left his bag here. Eb, will you help me open it?
Okie baby dokie. Say, that's sure an oversized suitcase. Looks more like a little trunk. Yeah. Now she's opened it.
Don't be frightened, baby. He can't hurt you. He's dead.
That's Bill Martin. He was the nicest man. The one that told you about
him. We had a woman's compact in his pocket.
Well, that's my compact. I wonder how he got it.
Nora, did you kill him?
Me? Kill him?
Yes, darling. Now, don't be afraid to tell me the truth.
Well, I don't remember.
Now, try to think. Did you stick a knife in his back because... Was he got fresh?
Well, I don't know.
You sure he was killed with a knife, Nick?
Well, yeah, you can see the wound in his back.
Say, there's bloodstains here near the telephone. Did you find anything more on his body?
Just this watch.
Oh, you can't use that, Nick. It's broken. Give it back.
Just a second. Nick, could that be broke like that because a bullet hit it?
That's what I was wondering, Ev. The hand stopped at 5:30. No bullet holes in this guy. Nora, you keep this watch. What's the name of the restaurant where you had tea with Joan Lawrence?
The Bixley on Lower Fifth Avenue. It's near Joan's apartment.
I'm going down there.
Do you think poor Joan is dead, too?
Maybe, baby. I want you and Eb to take a careful look around here and then go to Joan's apartment. Eb, use this collection of skeleton keys to get in. So long, darling. Take good care of her, Eb.
All right.
Eb.
Hmm?
You don't think I killed him, do you?
I don't know, Norrie. Say, will you take a look in them closets? I'm going over that other room. Careful.
All right, Ed. Oh, what a lovely... Oh, my neck. Let go. Let go.
Find anything in that closet, Norrie? Norrie? Don't you hear me? Norrie, I just looked...
Look.
Norrie. Words with me.
Yeah, that's right. Were you on duty in this restaurant about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon?
Yeah. Hey, ain't you Nick Charles?
That's right.
Don't you remember me? Rayfield, the rat.
Of course, I sent you up, didn't I?
Yeah. I could have got 50 years, but you only let me get 10. Gee, you changed. You used to be a good-looking young fella.
Well, I hope you've changed too, Rayfield. Here, will you take a look at this picture in my wallet?
Some doll.
That's my wife. Did you serve her yesterday?
What does the rest of her look like?
The usual accessories, but well placed.
She was here with another dame. This other dame had a wonderful build. I saved them.
Where?
In that boot right over there.
Listen, Rayfield, I want you to remember exactly what happened while they were here. Try and recall every detail. If it'll help your memory, act it out.
Okay. Now, let me see. You be your wife. I am the girl with the bill. So, we come in. We look around to see if anybody notices what terrific lookers we is. And after we see that all the wolves is foaming at the mouth, we sit down.
Now, where do I sit?
In the corner of the booth. Me. I'm the other girl. I sits here. So another person joins us. A guy named Bill. Very good looking.
Bill Martin?
Yeah, that's his name. He ordered cocktails.
Now, listen carefully. Did you see Bill Martin put anything in the girl's tea?
No. But an hour later, they was all still here. Bill had lots of drinks, and they was all laughing like things was hilarious.
Did you see any of them leave?
Yeah, I left. I mean me, the girl with the bill. I comes up and asks me, Rayfield, where is the telephone booth? And I tell me. And me, Rayfield, I see your wife and a man in the booth.
How'd my wife look?
Tired, like. Sort of sitting in the corner, leaning back with her eyes closed. I figure she drunk some of the guy's cocktails.
When did this girl return?
In about 5 minutes.
Did the man leave the booth at all?
No. Why should he leave when he's got a good-looking babe like your wife there? About 6 o'clock, they all left together. They all walked with a wobble.
Okay, Rayfield. Guess that'll be all. Thanks.
Don't mention it. And if you need my help again, be free to call on me. Nothing's too much for the guy what set me up the river for 10 years.
Of course I will accept your check for $200, Mr. Charles. That's Leo for you. He'll take a check from anybody.
Do you mind if I ask you a few questions, Leo?
Not at all. I personally am a convivial spirit, and I like conversations.
At what time did my wife break that mirror?
At precisely 2 a.m.
What makes you so sure?
I was waiting to hear the war news. You know, they have it on the radio every hour.
Bill Martin and this girl were with my wife all the time?
Yeah.
Why did you say Bill Martin was a no-good?
Did you ever hear of Pedro Gonzalez?
Sure, he used to have a bootlegging mob.
It's black market now. This guy, Bill Martin, was connected with him. He tried to sell me some tax-free liquor once.
Hmm. Leo, can I use your phone?
Sure, go ahead. Take a tip from me, pal. Don't fool around with Gonzales. He ain't no convivial spirit.
Well, I'm just trying to find out if Martin drugged my wife.
Hello?
Hello, Eb. How long have you been there at Jones' place?
Oh, a few minutes, Nick. Say, I'm glad you called. The killer was hiding in one of the closets.
Did you get him?
No, the killer got us.
What?
He socked Nori on the head. But she's all right now.
Oh, good.
He sneaked out the side entrance.
Well, did you find anything important in the apartment?
I reckon so. We found another corpse.
Who? Joan?
No. Her husband. Shot full of bullet holes. And plenty murdered.
Yeah. All right, I got you, Nick. All right, Nick, I'll do like you say. All right.
Did Nick find the killer, Eb?
No, but he was telling me about the information he dug up.
What are you doing there, Eb?
Just looking at this corpse's pocket, Nori. There's a bullet hole into it. I didn't notice that before.
Is it important?
Maybe. Now, that's the vest pocket, where a fellow usually carries a watch. You know, I think this fellow was not only killed, he was robbed by Godfrey.
Eb, did you notice that banjo clock on the wall?
What about it?
It stopped at 2. And the reason it stopped is because there are a couple of bullet holes in it. Look. Oh, Joan, darling.
Hello, Nora. Oh, I've got the most awful headache. Gilbert, what happened?
Now, Joan,
to him?
Joan, try to put yourself together. Your husband's been murdered. We found him here like that. Now, dear.
Oh, Nora, this is awful.
There, now. Nick and our friend Ed Williams are working on this case. Now, if you can keep a grip on yourself, you can help us.
Well, I'll be all right, Nora. I was afraid something like this was going to happen. That's why I wanted to talk to you yesterday. My husband and Bill Martin, they were in trouble with Pedro Gonzalez. He's a gangster, you know.
Yeah, Nick told me all about that. Miss Lawrence, where was you last night?
Well, I'm not really sure. It's all very hazy. I woke up only a few minutes ago at the Royal Crest Hotel. Did anything happen to Bill Martin?
He's been murdered, too.
Oh, no.
Nora, he was drugged.
Well, then I must have been drugged, too. Well, of course, I see it all now. They drugged us so I wouldn't go home and find them killing Gilbert. And Bill Martin must have known about it. He was very close to them, so they killed him to keep him quiet.
Was your husband alive at 2 yesterday afternoon?
Well, yes, I had lunch with him.
Joan, why'd you murder your husband?
What are you talking about?
You, Joan. You murdered both of them.
Nora, he's crazy, isn't he?
Eb, how could she have done it? It's impossible.
No, she drugged you at about 5:15 yesterday afternoon. Then left, saying she had to make a phone call. But instead, she come up here and killed her husband. She turned the clock back to 2, put a few bullets into it, come back to the restaurant where you were sitting with Bill Martin. In your condition, Nori, you didn't even know she'd been gone.
I don't remember everything, but I do know Joan was with me last night.
Sure. She was using you as an alibi. At 2 a.m., the time she wanted the police to believe the murder was committed, she and Bill Martin put you up to throwing that horseshoe into the mirror in back of Leo's bar.
But why'd she want me to do a thing like that, Ed?
To strengthen the alibi. Ain't that right, Joan?
He's out of his head.
Am I? You give Nori an extra dose of the drug. Put her to bed at the Wilson Hotel. Now, up to this point, Bill Martin was helping you. Your problem now was to get rid of Martin.
I suppose I killed him, too.
You told him to call Nick's place, act like a goon, and use the name Wolfie. The object was to see if Nori was home yet. Well, since he finished phoning, you drove a knife into his back. Nick even heard his scream.
Listen, if I'm such a clever killer, why'd they ever pick on Nora to have tea with me?
Because you knew after your husband was found dead that Nori would get Nick interested in the case. It'd be simple to hint that Bill Martin got some hoodlum to do it. Martin would appear especially guilty since he was dead also.
All right. Get him up, both of you. I'm getting out of here. If any of you try to follow me, you'll be killed. Goodbye.
Hello.
Nicky.
I just clipped her lightly on the chin, darling.
Nicky, guess what? Eb solved the whole thing. She's the killer.
Well, of course, baby. I knew it all along.
Now, how did you figure it out?
Darling, you know I never discuss such things outside our bedroom. Wait till tonight.
Why can't you ever tell me how brilliant you are in broad daylight? All right, dear. I'm ready and waiting for your story.
Well, it was simplicity itself, baby. I knew that whoever drugged you probably committed the murder. There were only two suspects, Martin and Joan.
And since Martin was dead, it happened to be Joan.
Right. I was afraid for a while that Joan was dead, too. I'd have to investigate Gonzalez. Joan confessed that she did it for her husband's insurance. Martin was in love with her, and so was a willing accomplice.
Did you miss me last night, dear?
Well, not at all.
You big liar. Eb told me what you said. I ought to stay away more often. It'll make you appreciate me.
Better not try it, or I'll stay away nights, too.
What about me did you miss most of all, Nicky?
The way you say good night.
Oh. Well, then. Good night, Nicky, darling.
Thank you, Nick and Nora Charles, for another chapter in The Adventures of the Thin Man. Tonight's presentation in the Mystery Playhouse. Before taking our usual trip to the green room, let's discuss three ways we can all help lengthen the war. Here they are. First, throw away all your extra equipment. Second, don't take care of the equipment and ordnance you have left. Third, waste your field rations. Only eat the parts you like. Well, that's only three ways. But if each and every man and woman in the service indulged in just those three consistently, V-Day would be a far cry indeed. Of course, no one would act like that on purpose, but unfortunately, we all tend to treat GI materiel a little bit like a stepsister. And when you multiply your callousness and wastage a million or more times, it's no longer funny. So let's not help lengthen the war. Let's shorten it by conserving everything we have. And now to the green room and a preview performance of our next Mystery Playhouse attraction. Follow me, please. Come.
Mr. Finney, why did Mr. Clabber have us all come here for a conference?
I don't know, Miss Warner. It's about the theft of those rare books, I guess.
You've been with the A.H. Dark Company for a long time, Mr. Finney. Tell me, is the bookstore in a really bad way?
Well, it's pretty bad, Miss Warner.
Careful, people. Here comes old Crank Clever.
Oh, here he is.
Philip Dark, you coming in here with me or aren't you?
I'm coming, Mr. Clever. I'm coming.
Now, silence, please.
All right. Just a moment, people. Mr. Clever has something to say.
As you all know, for the past few months, the A.H. Dark Company has been losing rare items out of our private stock of first editions. I'm convinced those thefts are an inside job. One of you employees is the thief.
Now, wait, please. I want you all to know that Mr. Clabber and I are in total disagreement on this. Personally, I trust every one of you.
Well, I don't. This stealing keeps up, the company will go bankrupt. So I've decided on a drastic step. As of closing time today, the entire staff of this store, every last one of you, is fired.
Me too. But Mr. Clabber, I've been with the A.H. Dark Company as bookkeeper for 58 years. Mr. Dark, Mr. Phil.
I'm sorry, Mr. Finney, but I'm helpless. Mr. Clabber now owns 51% of the stock. That gives him full power to dictate store policy.
But even if one of us is a thief, why make the rest of us suffer?
I know, Miss Warner, but my hands are tied. Mr. Clabber's arranging to have new clerks report tomorrow and a new secretary stenographer.
I may as well tell you that Mr. Dark's talked me into promising that if and when the thief is caught, all you people will be rehired. Now, that's all. Back to your counter. Doc, where are you running to off such a hurry?
Boston, Clapper, and I wish to heaven it was the North Pole.
Ellery, this is Miss Warner of the A.H. Dark Company.
How do you do?
How do you do? And I brought along Mr. Finney, the bookkeeper.
Sit down, please. Meet Mr. Fletcher, my assistant. How do you do?
How do you do?
What can I do for you?
You start, Mr. Finney.
Well, Mr. Crane, young Mr. Philip Dark doesn't know much about the rare book business, and, well, the firm's in pretty bad shape.
So some time ago, Mr. Dark was forced to take in a partner, Mr. Clabber, who knew rare books and had capital, too. Adolph Clabber...
Adolph Clabber's one of the leading rare book experts of America, Queen.
I've heard of him, Fletcher.
Well, sir, Mr. Clabber started printing special editions of classics limited to one copy for wealthy collectors.
Editions of one copy? That's really limited.
Yes, miss. Mr. Clabber does all the work by hand himself. His private press and bindery in his Long Island home.
Mr. Finney, the point is business didn't improve much. And then valuable old firsts began to disappear from the store. The insurance company hasn't found the thief yet. And now Mr. Clabber's gone and fired everyone in the store.
What? That's terrible, Miss Warner.
Even me. 58 years worth of stock.
But Mr. Clabber will take us all back when the thief is caught. So, Mr. Queen, will you find the thief?
And get our jobs back.
Nicky, come on. You and I are going to investigate this case from the inside. We're going to become bookstore clerks.
Well, there's the beginning of our next Mystery Playhouse production, featuring the master detective, Ellery Queen. Ellery temporarily goes into the rare book business to get at the bottom of a peculiarly intriguing mystery, which you and our audience, of course, are invited to have a go at, too. So come with your thinking caps on next time as Ellery Queen turns his attention to The Adventure of the Dark Secret. This is Sergeant X, closing the doors of the Mystery Playhouse. Good night. Sleep tight.
The Adventures of the Thin Man, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 6th of October, 1944. That broadcast first heard on CBS. And so closes this hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for listening.